From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Evidence that the U.S. economy is teetering on the brink of a recession is piling up. For the third straight month, U.S. employers slashed jobs. The month of March left 80,000 people without a paycheck. The national unemployment rate is at 5.1% overall, and the rate is 9% for Black Americans, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Economists expect those numbers to rise. So what's the best course of action for people looking for a job? Could going back to college give you a boost, or could it actually drain your resources? With us now, author and economist Julianne Malveaux. She's president of Bennett College. Welcome, Dr. Malveaux.
Greetings, Fry. How are you?
I'm doing well, but some people aren't. And let's talk about these figures and really what is shifting in our economy right now in terms of the different sectors where people are losing these tens of thousands of jobs.
Well, people are looking ahead and they're very uncertain, and that's what we see in markets. We see people laying people off. We also have some challenge in financial markets. Certainly, the Bear Stearns crisis raises all kinds of questions. The housing market, of course, we've talked about that on this program several times, but the fact is that we see a stagnancy, we don't see growth, we see houses that are overvalued, lots of people in mortgage crisis, people who bought homes within the last 5 years finding that they overpaid for their homes and they couldn't sell them at what they paid for them, so they're stuck. That removes liquidity. You've got lots of reasons to be concerned about this economy, not the least of which is the fact that the Federal Reserve Chair, Ben Bernanke, has done yet another interest rate cut. And the question is, how many more cuts can he do? He has so many arrows in his quiver. So we're looking at a very fragile economy. And certainly the employment piece is the most important piece for most Americans because most people don't have trust funds or extra money. Many who do have home equity have it tapped out. The way that 90% of us support ourselves is that we work every day, and increasing numbers of people don't have employment opportunities.
When you look at what's happening right now, there have been times when there are certain, you know, white-collar jobs that have really gotten hit hard. I'm thinking of the computer industry, the technology industry in the 90s when there was that dot-bomb era. But is this really, for now, more of a blue-collar job loss, or is it mixed?
It's really a mixed bag. You see many corporations who are downsizing, they call it right-sizing, who are cutting, if it's by as little as 5%, for riot adds up. We see state governments also looking at a drop in revenue coming in because of a drop in tax revenue, and they're thinking of cutting and may have already done some cutting. We've seen, as I said, the financial industries, New York is worried about what's happening on Wall Street because those bloated incomes on Wall Street, as bloated as they may seem, also support lots of people down the line. So someone who, makes six figures, it's not just that they make six figures, but they have other people who are backing them up. And so people are concerned about that in New York and in other parts of the country as well. So I would not put one sector as the victim of the economic uncertainty. I would say that while it's not evenly spread around, it's more spread than we've seen in the past.
So let's talk about what someone should do if they're slapped with a pink slip. You know, if jobs are getting cut on a monthly basis, a daily basis, it might not be easy to find the right job right away. So what about options like job training programs? What questions should you ask yourself if you've been laid off or let go?
The first thing I'd say about the job market is that while people are being laid off, people are also being hired every day. So people should stay in the game. They should look at what their CV or their resume says, whether or not it accurately depicts them, and think about things that they might be willing and able to do and just start getting those resumes out there if necessary. There are lots of job counselors. There's an employment service, federally run employment service in most cities of the country and certainly in most states. And there is free employment advice at those places. But there are some people who are going to have been left off because they don't have the right skill set, and they should look at job training programs. Many community colleges have programs around things like a travel agent or travel coordinator, real estate. Of course, that's not the greatest place to go right now, but some people are going there because there are opportunities that are being released, computer science, any number of things. You can find programs at the community colleges. I encourage people not to get stuck, not to get stagnant, but to just really get out there. Monster.com is one of a number of great websites that has employment possibilities. So just keep it going. Also, don't be too proud to beg. You've got to go to the unemployment office. You'll get money, around $200 a week and maybe more in some states, you know, to help out with those bills in the interim. So I would encourage people just to be totally engaged in the process of looking at what the next chapter of their life will be like. But as you say, would college help? For some people, it will. But people who are mature shouldn't go to college just to go to college, as many of our 18 and 19-year-olds do. They really probably can't afford to go without having a plan. Do they want to finish nursing school? Do they want a business degree? Is there some skill or talent that they could enhance with college participation? And college certainly is not cheap. Community colleges are cheaper, but four-year colleges, especially private ones, really do come with a hefty price tag, and resources from most colleges are more available for the traditional student, the young person coming right out of high school or transferring from another college than for the untraditional or mature student.
What about the issue? Say that you do decide to go back to college to pick up a very specific skill that you think will be marketable, and you find yourself in a position where you're going to have to take out a significant amount of loans. How do you make, you know, what are some of the questions you should ask yourself about what is worth it in terms of how much education you can get, how many credit hours, how do you balance that, for example, with part-time work? Is there a point at which getting an education actually, you know, and this cuts across the grain of a lot of different values, could be detrimental to your short-term financial health?
Well, now, Farai, you're asking a college president if education is detrimental? You know the answer to that. No, it isn't. But on the other hand, there certainly is a cost-benefit analysis that everyone has to do, especially the mature student, about whether or not they want to invest at this point in time in education. The BA degree for many jobs and occupations is actually a union card. And so many people will find that as they begin to evaluate their position, they haven't moved more quickly in their career because they don't have that degree. Can they do it full-time or part-time? It depends on the institution. But they've got to really make a list. What do I get and what do I give in terms of dollars? Certainly student loans and other kinds of financial aid resources are available to mature students. Less so, but they are available. You've got several foundations and others who look at mature women in particular and giving them the reentry opportunity. Indeed, the term is reentry women. That's used. So people can certainly do that kind of, how much is my new job going to pay? And how much am I going to have to spend? What's the student loan rate like? And this is a really tough time, frankly, for people who are seeking student loans. There's some resources. I wanted to make sure that listeners checked out staffordloan.com, S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D, loan. com. It's a service of the Student Loan Network, and it's got piles of information, especially about federal loans.
Well, when you think about some of the difficulties people may face with student loans, is there a tightening of that loan market in the same way that there's been a tightening of some of the loans that go for consumer goods or housing?
Overall, there has been a tightening. We've had some people who left the student loan market because they're not making enough profit. You've had others who are leaving for related reasons. And so if a school is a direct lender, and some schools are direct lenders, and some work with our school, Bennett College for Women, works with Sallie Mae, but schools that are direct lenders are putting their resources more directly on the line, and they may have to be much more careful. One of the ironies, Farai, that really troubles me as I look at this market is that people with good credit are able to get better loans at better interest. People with bad credit end up paying higher interest. They often have to go for unsubsidized loans as opposed to the federally subsidized loans where the federal government pays the interest. But if you have bad credit, you might end up with an unsubsidized loan, which means you're paying the interest yourself. But that seems to me to be counterintuitive because you're punishing a student for their parents' bad credit. And basically, you want the student, you want to break the intergenerational cycle of poverty or poor credit, so you want to give a student a fresh start. But that seems to happen less and less. And so there's some implicit inequalities in the way that student loans are administered. And I think some of those implicit inequalities become much, much more obvious at a time like this when you see the market tightening.
Let's turn to a specific factor in education, historically black colleges and universities, a subject about which you know plenty. So the president has a 2009 education budget proposal. Is there any concern that it could hurt HBCUs?
There's enormous concern. HBCUs have great friends in the Senate and in the House of Representatives, certainly Congressman Jim Clyburn, who is himself a graduate of an HBCU, has been very careful to make sure that HBCUs get what we can get from the federal government. And there has been, in the budget that has come from the House, is about $90 million over a two-year period for technology programs on HBCU campuses. President Bush proposes that he would subtract that money from our Title III dollars. So in other words, we'd still be kept even. Title III dollars were founded or started about 20 years ago for HBCUs because you could see how HBCUs had been held back over the years just because of discrimination and other things. So these Title III dollars bring you a little bit of money. For Bennett, it's about $1.3 million a year. We've been held level with our Title III money for the past 5 years. Now there's an opportunity for some supplemental dollars to get more of us in a more high-tech situation, and the president would basically say, okay, you can have your increase, but then I'm going to slash. It just isn't reasonable or fair, and it undermines all the work that Congressman Clyburn and the Congressional Black Caucus and so many of our other friends, Congressman Cohen in Tennessee, and we could call the roll because many members of Congress really believe strongly that HBCUs are a vital asset. But our president has been very budget conscious in this area, not as budget conscious as he has been in other areas. And this budget consciousness will have a negative impact on our colleges.
Well, Dr. Malveaux, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was author and economist Julianne Malveaux. She is also president of Bennett College and spoke to me from WFDD's studios in Greensboro, North Carolina.